Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Douglas James Cottrell Global Village Radio Show. Tonight, part two of our early November guest interview with Dr. Connie McReynolds, a foremost expert in the field of ADHD and ADD and the benefits of neurofeedback. Dr. McReynolds is a pioneer in training the brain to help resolve the conditions that limit us from living our best lives. Now, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Welcome to the show. We have, again, an exciting guest today. You're just going to love what this very talented and wonderful woman has to say about her work. She's written a book called Solving the ADHD Riddle, and it's going to be a bestseller if it isn't one already. You should pick it up. But I want to welcome Dr. Connie McReynolds back to the show today. It's a pleasure to have you here. I trust you're well in this holiday season. Good to see you again.
Well, thank you so much for having me back, Douglas. It's great to see you again and be here again and really share the information with your listeners.
Well, for those people who might not have seen the previous interview that you were on, which is just going skyrocketing off the charts, people are just fascinated what your work is all about and yourself and your new book. Tell us a little bit about how you came to solving the ADHD riddle and put it in the book. What's it all about?
Well, really, it's about understanding what's underneath the label. And that's my history. That's my educational background as a rehabilitation counselor and a rehabilitation psychologist, is kind of moving beyond the label, moving beyond the diagnosis, moving beyond maybe the traditional view of what ADHD is. And that's really what my work uncovered over the past 15 years. And so when I started peeling back what the perceived normality was of the label of ADHD, I started recognizing and evaluating and really investigating what this was. And what I came to understand over all of these years is that when we're able to identify the root cause of what's going on with ADHD, we have a chance of actually tackling that root cause and helping people move beyond the limitations that they may be experiencing with that diagnosis and with some other diagnoses.
Well, it's very important work. And I think everybody has things in their mind, in their background, that is affecting them and who they are today. Some of the scars, the wounding, the backgrounds, the bullying when you were a kid or the mishaps, they kind of stick with you. But more important are the children who have this ADHD situation going on, and you have discovered a way to train the brain, if I can call it that, that these people can overcome this. Can I call it a disease, or what should I call it?
Well, I call it a challenge.
Fair enough.
Because I have found that when we use the terms such as disorder and diseases, it tends to kind of lock people into this state of mind that this is something almost impenetrable. I mean, we can't get past it. We don't know what we're going to do about it. We have these traditional beliefs about it, traditional interventions. And for the folks that come into my clinics, whether they're children or adults, these traditional viewpoints haven't really brought them to a better place in their life, nor have the traditional interventions. And by the traditional interventions, I'm generally talking about traditional behavioral interventions and traditional medication interventions. Doesn't mean that some of that isn't working for a lot of people. Obviously, I'm not treating everyone on the planet. I'm only dealing with and helping people in my clinics. So when I think about them coming in, I don't even think about it needing to be a, quote, treatment. I talk about it and feel about it that this is just a process that this person's going through, like any process, any challenge that we have in our life. And if we put it into the perspective of, hey, this is just something I need to figure out, then it becomes much less powerful for that person. And it kind of becomes a much smaller speed bump, perhaps in their road, than a gigantic roadblock that sometimes it becomes for some people. And so really that's what I do, is just kind of focus on where are you, what's going on, and what can we figure out. I have a 20-minute computer-based assessment that we use. It's been validated in research studies. I've been using it for 15 years, and it helps me really understand, and the person to understand, okay, these are my areas of strength for auditory and visual processing. This is why this works so well for me. And these areas over here are not so strong. And so that kind of helps me understand why maybe when my boss talks to me, I can't remember what I'm supposed to do because my auditory memory isn't quite where it needs to be. So I can't hang on to that. And then I feel powerless to do my work. I get lost, and children get lost in the classroom.
Right. I've had some of that experience myself. And I think everybody, as you get older, you know, you might be on the way to having some timer. Sometimes you remember, sometimes you don't. So, but along the way, the influence of your life creates trauma sometimes. And I understand you deal with military personnel and children. Children have been in foster care. Children have been traumatized in their life, adults as well. Could you explain to the audience how that works with people who have suffered trauma?
So that really began when I was in my doctoral program, close to maybe 30 years ago now, in Madison, Wisconsin. And so I was working at the VA there. I was on the chemical dependency treatment unit, and I was put in charge of running the anger management program for veterans who were court ordered in due to domestic violence problems and just anger management problems.
Wow.
And I worked with them, and you know, we would have year-long programs. The chemical dependency treatment program, as effective as it was for those veterans, took a long time really for it to take hold for a lot of folks. And then the anger management program was weeks or months in length, and I did affect change. I'm happy with and proud of the work that I did there with the processes that we used to really help veterans get better management of this. And then when it came to trauma, PTSD, most of these veterans that we were working with, it didn't take much of a scratch of the surface to really figure out that we were really dealing with PTSD, regardless of what brought them in the door, whether it was chemical abuse or anger management or whatever. It was PTSD. And so if I knew then what I know now, I would have had a very different approach to helping them. And so fast forward to my work here in Southern California and delving into looking at the use of neurofeedback with trauma. And I really started this with veterans here in this region. So I began the program, and I've published on this. So I looked at our results that we achieved with, I think we had 30 veterans that came in. I can't remember how many I had in the study, because they came in at different times, and so we were collecting the data as we could and went along with it. But I was looking at if we tackle auditory and visual processing problems, and we looked at trauma and how that gets hardwired into the brain, can we impact general well-being? So does the general well-being in this veteran's life change after we've identified these areas that could be strengthened or, kind of helped? And so what I found when we ran that assessment for auditory and visual processing is the vast majority of them actually did have auditory and visual processing problems underneath everything else. So when that started, how it started, no one knows. We can't really speak to that. And then we also found that there was the stress level, the anxiety, the difficulties of just managing what it was like being back after having served in the military. And by using the neurofeedback, we were able to help that brain calm down. And so part of what neurofeedback can do, and the military has used this, by the way. And so I've actually had a psychologist from a base call me one time after I got started on this project and shared with me that at that base, they had actually treated over 500 veterans using neurofeedback.
Wow.
And they weren't able to really speak about it for some reason. So I didn't quite understand all of that.
Classified information, no doubt.
So I did learn a little bit about the fact that they were using it. The military has used this. And then I did come across an amazing video clip of the Fort Hood incident that happened a number of years ago. And there was a training video that went out that was revealing the effects of using neurofeedback for one of the veterans who had had two or three tours of duty and the before and after video clips of him, which were just stunningly different. And he himself spoke to the fact that had he not seen those prior video clips of himself, he would not have believed that's what he looked like and how he acted after he had the neurofeedback, because he couldn't remember that. And so it was really quite, you know, encouraging to see that as well. And so that really kind of, you know, prompted me to move forward with this and working with trauma for people. And what we really found is that it can make a big difference in a lot of different ways than traditional treatment for what has happened for a lot of folks with trauma, which had really been talk therapy or some of the other interventions that have been used over the years. And my conversations with veterans in this region when we were starting up this project is that they felt like the talk therapy for them wasn't very effective, because they would go to the group, so they would go in for talk therapy, and then all the memories would start flooding back. And then they would have two or three or four days of increased nightmares and just trauma around having talked about it and kind of brought all that stuff back up to the surface that they didn't know how to process through. So with neurofeedback, the beauty of this is it just sidesteps the need for talk therapy, and it just goes straight into helping the brain learn how to calm down again. And so we just practice relaxation is essentially what's happening here. And so if you can practice it in an organized manner, and so it's structured, it's organized, you're coming in, you have someone that's kind of helping you know whether you have excess tension, because it's going to show up on the screen. If you're in a high stress level, it's going to show that. And it's like, well, I don't feel stressed. It's like, well, we're measuring that you are. So, you know, here it is. This is your biological data that's right. Saying, yeah, you're in a state of stress. So, and that was an eye popper for me in the beginning, because I thought, oh my goodness. Well, of course, if you've lived like this for a long period of time, you won't remember or know what it was like to not live like this. So this has become normal.
I'm relating to that myself. You know, when I see some people come in to see me for counseling, their shoulders are up around their ears like I'm indicating here, and they have no idea that they're like so stressed. And for somebody who's been in service, combat, who knows what they've seen or done, it becomes normal to be in that adrenaline rush all the time, so that you're on guard all the time. And every movement is like an alert that some, you know, might be killed or hurt or whatever. And then I guess to deal with that, the brain must have some sort of balancing to say, okay, we went from the wake up in the West. Now we're in this environment where we're being attacked or possibly killed, and it adjusts, and that trauma becomes normal. And then when the person goes back to real life, that's still there. Without any kind of like, here I am, it's kind of like a thief in the night underneath. And you've discovered a way on how to get there without the person having to go back to deal with the trauma. I think that's a miracle. How did you do that? How did you come across that ability to get under the layer and get down to where the challenge is?
Well, it just came from experience. And so it came from my time at the VA and understanding what PTSD really looked like. And I just will probably always remember this incident. We were working with a Vietnam veteran. And unfortunately, the helipad for the hospital was like a block away.
Well, I know what you're going to say. He hit the floor, did he not?
Oh, my gosh. He reacted so fast and was under the table before I think I even blinked my eyes. It was such a rapid response pattern in this veteran. I was just kind of almost numb to it. I didn't have words for it. Thankfully, being a doc student, had a great executive director sitting next to me. And I got to watch him, the executive director, who was so well trained in this, bring this guy back to the present moment. You know, another veteran lived kind of in a rural area outside of Madison. He was coming through our program, and the sheriff's office, everyone knew him in that small town because in the middle of the night, he would get triggered. He would go out in his backyard, and he would think he's in a bunker, and he would see things moving around, and he had firearms, and so he'd be firing off his firearms in the middle of the night.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we were working with him some, and I think of these men. It was mainly men that I worked with. That's the reason I say that. I think of these men, and then I fast forward all these years from that time frame and the veterans that we were able to work with here in this pilot project. So we actually were benefited by some community support for that program, and that made all the difference in the world because we could provide those services with the community support of a local VA, county VA, that helped us cover the cost of being able to do this work and helped cover the transportation costs for some of these veterans who were driving in more than 2 hours each way. And through that, then just this process of talking to the veterans, talking to people, there was one leader in the community who knew about neurofeedback. And I had been out in the community doing a presentation. He approached me and he says, I know all about this. And he said, we need to build a collaboration because I want you to be able to help me help these veterans in this region. And he was the one that secured the funding for me.
The proof is in the pudding, right?
Yes.
These men who were living, I guess, random access nightmares, if I can call it that.
Mm-hmm.
The proof is in the pudding that their recall, the trauma, went away.
It did. It lessened substantially. And so I was really wanting to measure that. And so we had a well-being scale that we administered at the front end and the back end just to measure stress levels, kind of perception of the world and such. So we had hardcore data from pre-post that we could look at. And then, of course, we took the narratives and the stories of the veterans who were participating. And I'll always remember this one where he told me that we actually saved his marriage because he said he'd been married for some number of years, 20 or 30 years. And he said he would come home and his wife would ask him a question and he would just go ballistic because she was so pushy and always asking all these questions and he, you know, couldn't handle it. And we did the neurofeedback with him and he came in after that and he said, I just want to tell you, he said, I now realize my wife was just trying to get some information. She wasn't doing anything to me.
No, she's trying to understand the situation. Like all wonderful, great women, wives, they want to help. It sounds like, you know, what happened when you were there and maybe you were in a firefight, maybe you did something really bad, maybe something happened to your buddy and not you, and you have survivor's guilt and all those other things come up in a flash.
And they don't even know that's what's racing through their mind. It's just get back, get away. I'm not going to answer any questions. You know, just leave me alone. And he said, I just want you to know we haven't taken a vacation together in 20 years and we're getting ready to take a vacation together.
Wow. That's amazing. Of course, everybody listening to this now who may have a veteran in the family, they were wondering why he was going out the back shooting a shotgun off or something. They're going to say, where can I meet you? Come on over to our community.
Right. So up on my website, which is www.connie McReynolds. So it's just my name, C-O-N-N-I-E, McReynolds, McReynolds.com. There's a contact form there that they can just fill out. And so put their phone number. If you'll put your phone number in there, then I will give you a call. I do 15, 20 minute free consults. I just find that typically if it's an email and there's a host of questions in there, it's going to take me far longer to write the email, and you're going to have more questions after that. I may or may not answer or understand what the written question is. And it's just a lot, I think, better to just have the conversation with you and just kind of talk about what are some options and would we be positioned that we might be able to assist, and we could figure some things out. Certainly mindfulness and just learning meditation and being able to breathing exercises and things like that could be an opportunity as well.
I think that's marvelous of you to do so. And of course, people can ask intimate questions that they wouldn't maybe want to put on the internet. Yeah. And so after they talk to you, then you can extend possible services. You can't be everywhere. Do you have like associates or other clinics that you've trained what can we call them, the therapists or the doctors?
Well, I really talk about behavioral clinicians, kind of a blend between clinical work and behavioral interventions and technology. So there's a small cadre of us here that do this work. And what's nice is once we do the intake, which typically is an hour and a half, and so kind of regardless of which clinic they are in, they can run these sessions. So you know, I have two different clinics and we're in both, and it doesn't matter where the clinician's sitting, and it gives us the latitude of being able, you know, if someone's on the East Coast or somewhere else, we can just adjust our calendars to fit that. And it's 30 minutes, you know, a couple times out of a person's week. And that's really what that is. And so it makes it possible for us to really manage most of this in a, you know, effective way. So it's not as, I mean, it's a commitment, it's a time commitment for the person because you're going to be with us for a little bit of time. And so typically it's a minimum of 20 hours for trauma. Sometimes it's going to take more, because the trauma has been there in some cases for decades. This didn't just happen.
That's a small price to pay. Mm-hmm. If you could say you're having nightmares for decades from whatever happened, and children as well, foster care problems and abuses and things like that, which we'll talk in a moment about, to say, I need a 20-hour commitment from you, and you say, I'm going to get my life back. So just how long have you been doing this, so that just people are wondering, you know, this isn't recent. This is going on for a long time now.
I've been doing this for 15 years. So but neurofeedback has been around since the 1970s.
I guess the way, if somebody listening to this interview, they would be maybe fitting into some of the categories we've spoken about, or they've had similar experiences, and they're maybe, you know, rationalizing it, thinking about it, you go like, is this real? Is this possible? Well, the question I'll pose to them would be, has anything that you've done previously worked? And if it hasn't, here's a golden opportunity to try something that's very new, that is proven. They are hardcore hard facts. And I'm going to ask you about the children who've had suffered like that, but just the military guys, I mean, it's pretty serious stuff.
I mean, well, it really is. Yeah. And we've had a number of women who are coming in who had a different kind of trauma that often has been hidden away. And that's a pretty hard one to talk about. So it was a different kind of trauma that they went through in a lot of cases. So there's a lot of residual from some of those situations as well. And thankfully, women are coming forward a little bit more than they used to. So I've been working with a couple of women. And even in that pilot project we did, we had a couple of women that we were able to get in. It's a lot harder to get them recruited in because there's a lot more hiddenness. I guess we could make that word up, but it's really not talked about very much. And they don't come forward very easily.
Well, I'm of the opinion that when something bad happens to you, maybe the priest has touched you inappropriately. Maybe the school teacher did something. Maybe the schoolyard bully did something. Maybe a boyfriend did something. Maybe daddy did something. There is, in my counseling of people, there is, first of all, an assumption that they're guilty. They did something wrong. And they caused this to happen, letting the bad guy off the hook, or the bad person, more exactly. So getting past that, when they speak to you, it's confidential. It's an intimate conversation. And again, you're not trying to relive the mm-hmm. you know, this isn't going to court and reliving the trauma, the whatever. You're getting down into the inner world, inner thinking of the brain, and remedying there. So if people, if I'm right, you know, if I'm wrong, correct me, but if I'm right, then people ought to, if they have any concerns at all and they want to go back, even though they're saying, no, that was when I was 15, or that happened when my first husband was an alcoholic, whatever, that it doesn't matter. They should come and see you, because that never goes away, does it? It's always there under the surface.
It's under the surface, because this kind of trauma that these situations bring, and it can come from car accidents. And I will mention a book that just popped into my mind that is mandatory reading for anyone who works in my clinic.
Wait a minute, let me write it down.
But you may have heard about it. So it's Basil Vanderkolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. Yes. So he wrote one of the best books I've ever found on the market, because he wrote it for those of us who are not the brilliant wizards that he is.
Count me in.
Yeah, he wrote it for those of us who really don't walk in that heavy world that he walks in, for the average person, I'll just say, to be able to read. And he really talks about what happens with trauma. And the beautiful thing within his book is that he recommends neurofeedback for trauma. And so it's such a great book for people to read, because it will give them some understanding of what's happened within the body when there's been a traumatic event of any kind. So it can be car accidents, it can be childhood trauma, it can be, you know, the adverse childhood events that ACEs score. It can come from any number of things. I just opened a case on a child who has been adopted, fortunately. He's been with his adoptive family for 4 years now, but his first 3 years he was spent locked in a closet. So, you know, I see this stuff come in my clinic. And over 15 years, I can tell you there have been a lot of these stories of children who've come in that we're dealing with, trying to get that unwound out of their response pattern. So that's the survival mechanism of the brain. That's the amygdala system. And that survival system is here to keep us alive. And so when that system gets triggered and re-triggered, and there isn't a way to kind of get out from under that, then that system gets, what I came to describe it to our veterans, it's like, you know, that system works very well. The trouble is it just got stuck in the on position. And we need to reinstall the off switch, because you need it in case you're getting ready to step out in front of a car coming at you. You have to be able to activate that system to get out of the way. But you don't need that at 3 o'clock in the morning when a dog's barking. You don't need it 24/7. You only need it when there's a true life emergency now. And in the past, everything was a life emergency. So we just need to retool that a little bit. We just need to calm it down. And so let's just get it calmed down. We're going to do that. You don't even have to talk to me to do it. Just come on in. We're going to sit you down in front of a computer. We're going to do this 2 or 3 times a week. We're going to do this for a while until you're feeling better. So, you know, that's it. Let's just do this and go with it. And that's what we do.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Connie McReynolds and Solving the ADHD Riddle. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more of Dr. Douglas James Cottrell on the Global Village Radio Show after this short break. You're invited to embark on your own spiritual journey today by discovering the expansive works and services from Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Elevate your being physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Visit DouglasJamesCottrell.com. With over a dozen enlightening books and meditative audio downloads to help guide you through life's complexities. Delve deep into the mysteries of human consciousness, the future, and the spiritual realm. As the author of Secrets of Life, The Complete New Age Health Guide, Conversations with the Akashic Field, and more, Douglas opens the doors to realms most people only dream of visiting. The writings of Dr. Douglas James Cottrell are based on his unique ability to visit the Akashic Field, where all knowledge since the dawn of man is stored. You can read about the predictions, many of which have already come true, and planetary changes, health remedies, human growth are all written. Go to DouglasJamesCottrell.com and view the selections of books and MP3 audio available now. That's DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Welcome back to the Dr. Douglas James Cottrell Global Village Radio Show, where tonight we're featuring part two of our early November guest interview with Dr. Connie McReynolds, a foremost expert in the field of ADHD and ADD and the benefits of neurofeedback. We're not taking phone calls tonight, as this interview is pre-recorded. Don't forget, you can see these interviews on the Dr. Douglas James Cottrell YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and search at Douglas James Cottrell, Ph.D. Now, once again, here's our host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
Well, just before the break, my friends, we were talking to Dr. Connie about trauma and how children have been children that have been somewhat abused in foster care or that they've had traumatic experiences. And then how I think you said that the brain, it's a protection mechanism that gets switched on. And then your therapy or service teaches how to shut off that normal survival mechanism in the body. And I was intrigued with your remark. We said it's just sort of left on all the time. So great when you need it, when you step out in front of a car, as you say, to jump out of the way. Not so good when you're at 3 o'clock in the morning and you got a wife and children and you go ballistic and everybody turns on the lights and goes, what's going on? So tell us how do you get to switch that off and sort of maintain that balance between still having a survival mechanism, right, but calming down that mind?
Well, yes. And so what I really have found is adults who've had the childhood trauma, it's really hardwired in. So for those adults who went through it, and, you know, that can come from bullying. That can come from any host of things. That stuff gets stuck in the brain. And so that survival mechanism kicks in because we're not feeling safe. And that system is going to go into high alert. It's like then we're kind of watching for things. We're vigilant. And then sometimes the brain can go into what we call hypervigilant mode, which is where the PTSD really resides. It's in this hypervigilant state that it's just on 24/7. And so I've often explained to people, it's like, well, you have a floor. And so let's say we have an average floor where everyone starts, but you have an incident that happens. And so the ceiling and the floor could be pretty far apart on the average person. So you might get a spike. It might go up a little bit, but then that system's supposed to come back down to the floor. So now let's go along. We've had two or three, maybe four incidences of something happening that's unpredictable. There's something that's frightening us. There's something that is feeling unsafe. We don't know if we're going to be protected by something. And so that system goes up and starts responding, but it doesn't ever come quite back down to the floor again. And the more of that happens, the more the floor rises up and the closer it gets to the ceiling. So where we get to where we get triggered so easily, because the floor and the ceiling, there's very little space between them. And so what we need to do is lower the floor. So we want to get that adrenaline system to calm down, so it's not pumping so much adrenaline into the body and the cortisol. And so those are the protective mechanisms that our body gears us up. It actually can cause, the cortisol can cause weight gain in people if it's there for too long of a period of time. So there's all kinds of body mechanics that happen. And Basil van der Kolk's book really talks a lot about that, which I think is such a great book.
It is so true, you know. And for those people who don't have ADHD, for those knuckleheads like me who played football or hockey and you abused your body, well, if you if you abuse me now, I'm going to get you later. And so, you know,
right.
You're limping around, your back hurts, you know, your head hurts. And so that's just logical stuff, right? And, of course, if I knew now, what I should have known back then, I wouldn't have hurt myself so much playing for nothing, you know, just this bragging rights in high school, whatever, in college and stuff. So, I love that title. The body keeps the score. It's great. And that's a good, I guess, would be a good way to open up somebody's thinking and say, okay, so solving the ADHD riddle, that just is the next step, but it makes sense to somebody's, again, I think usually there's a lot of mistrust. I would assume, at least I would have some experience that way too. There's a lot of mistrust with people who want to help you because people that were supposed to help you may have been the perpetrator who took advantage of you or, you know, whatever. But when you're in combat or when you're as a child locked away in a closet for years or you were made into a slave when you've been adopted into a family or foster care, that's got to change the person's personality, their values on the world, and a whole lot of other things. Maybe, you know, they're becoming a criminal in training, or maybe they're becoming a revolutionary or a terrorist in training because of what's happened to them. And so it would be important to shut this down before they get along that road too much further.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the beautiful thing of this is it's possible to do. And we can literally help the brain learn how to calm back down by teaching it how to relax. And so it's really learning how to relax. The challenge with trauma is that it's such an instantaneous response pattern. Like the people I've described, it just comes so fast. The responses come so quickly. It's so hard for the person to slow down that reaction to have space in between what they hear, experience, and how they respond. And so the neurofeedback intervention helps give that space. And so that's what the veterans have described it as. And that's what I've even had teenagers describe it as, who couldn't pay attention in school or everything just flooded them all the time. I can have a moment to choose how I'm going to respond. Then I have a lot more control in my life for how I'm living my life. And that's really where we want people to get, which is an empowered state.
Well, on that note, what's in my mind as you're talking, I'm thinking, first, there's the memory or the thought, and then there's the emotion, and they're linked together. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is, because what someone figured out how to film dendrites and neurons in the brain connecting and disconnecting. And so that was such an interesting thing when I found that, because when we train the brain to learn something, we're literally connecting these dendrites together, and that's what becomes a habit, which is also why bad habits are hard to break, because they're wired in. If we want to move into something else and away from certain response patterns, we have to create something different. And so when we're creating something different, we're literally using a different road, if you will, in the brain, so that old road just kind of prunes away. And so there are video clips of these pruning things taking place in the brain where these disconnections are happening. It's like, this is disconnecting. This is connecting over here. So if I want to get rid of a bad habit, I can't sit around and think, oh, I need to get rid of this bad habit. I need to get rid of this bad habit. I've got a bad habit. That's just hardwiring in the bad habit. Then the way to get to that, you have to figure out where you want to go, not what you don't want to do. You have to figure out what you do want to do. Well, if I want to eat healthier, I have to go to the grocery store and buy healthier foods to start with. So I have to make those decisions. I have to maybe clean out my pantry. I have to make that decision too. So that's really kind of what we're doing here. It's just, where do you want to go? If you want to have a calmer brain, then we have to do things that help the brain remember how to be calm or learn how to be calm in a lot of cases. And we do that through the repetition of calmness training, of relaxation training. And we can do it because we're measuring that response pattern in the person's brain. We have a little sensor. So we have these little sensors that we put on the scalp, and it's going to tell you when you are in an excess tense state. It's going to read that, whether you believe it or not. It's going to show you, it's going to flash on the screen, excess tension, so that you can literally figure out, oh, that's what that feels like. Oh, I've had it so long, I didn't know. Kind of back to where we were earlier. If you've always had this kind of state, it's really hard to know something different. And so part of this is giving people the feedback in a nearly instantaneous manner. This is how your brain is responding.
You can watch it on the screen. Wow.
You watch on the screen. So it's going to flash on the computer. That's excess tension. And there's going to be some bars going up and down of different colors, and we may have thresholds that you're trying to do. And sometimes we have a program, training programs that we run that, you know, if you're manifesting a calmer brain, you're going to win that program or this little video game or something. Kind of keep the brain occupied, the mind occupied while we're training the brain. And it's all non-invasive. So there's not anything being administered to the brain. You simply are just learning how to have more empowerment over your own mental faculties, if you will, over your response patterns when we're dealing with trauma. And we had one parent came in that the child was afraid of the wind. Well, we live in kind of a windy area around here, and she couldn't leave the house when the wind was blowing. She literally had a meltdown anytime that was happening. So we got her in and we worked with her. We did about 20 hours and never come back. We don't get to make a decision on how we're going to respond when our life is threatened. Our brain's going to take over. That survival mechanism is going to take over, unless you've been seriously, you know, trained, like our military forces or people who've been trained to be able to manage that. But the average person's frontal lobe kind of shuts down. So that rational thinking, executive decision making, and the longer this amygdala system is kind of activated and triggered, the more that can shut down, and they may have difficulty kind of being able to make decisions in their life. We kind of talk about it takes up more real estate in the brain. And so and what comes to mind is really something that I think people really don't know very well. I've seen some research out there on it, but not a whole lot, is that when people are asked to give testimony about a traumatic event, they're supposed to put it in a linear manner.
Oh, gosh.
Many people can't, because that's not how trauma gets stored in the brain. It doesn't get stored in a linear, logical storytelling experience. It gets stored in an emotional, psychological, scattered pattern. That's why sometimes a smell can bring back a triggered response pattern, a sound, as something that someone sees, a movement of some sort. That's the emotional brain, the psychological brain there. It's not the rational brain being able to talk about that. So when a witness or an eyewitness to something can't tell the story, or a person who's experienced that can't tell the linear story, it isn't because it didn't happen. It's because it wasn't stored in a linear manner that they can talk about.
Kind of random access, right? The brain, and maybe that's a self-defense mechanism, putting little bits of negativity, if I can call it that, in different places instead of one big gobsule, a critical mass kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to me. But is there a time lag when these little kids come back, or when people have gone through traumatic experiences, like survived a car crash where they're the only one left, or a plane crash? Is there a time lag where there needs to be like a healing and then the treatment to the brain, or can it be done right away?
Well, I think there are different schools of thoughts on that. I think whatever that person's really needing, people need some support, I think, right away, just to let them know people are around. They may not be able to talk about it, though. And that's the key here, is they may not be able to talk about it. So they may need other types of support.
TLC or something.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone could be a little bit different on how that happens. But some people can talk about it, and they need to talk about it, and they need to talk about it, you know, over and over. We just don't want them to get stuck in the talking about it. We want to help them move on at some point, because some people can get so locked into the story, then they can't move forward. And that's a trauma response pattern too. And so if someone is just constantly locked in telling the same story over and over and over and over again, that can become a re-traumatizing experience for them as well. But everyone's different. So we can't just create, you know, a cookie cutter here. We can't just pigeonhole people and say, oh, you're talking about it too much. I don't want to hear about it anymore. They may need to be talking about it, but maybe they need some professional help to help them move beyond it too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it requires, if you're a lay person, you're somebody in the family or a friend, your friend's calling you up and they're complaining about some abuse that's happening to them at work or whatever. And in my world, I would tell people, just be patient, let them talk it out, and they'll feel better. But don't tell them what to do. You know, don't say, you need to talk to a lawyer, you need to talk to a defense attorney, you need to talk to, you know, like, just say, okay, so what are you going to do now? How about you do something on Sunday, or let's go to the theater, or more, let's go to the ball game or something. That's the first line of lay people defense, is listening, letting somebody talk about it, because then maybe they'll go the next step. But listening to what you had to say today about your book, Solving the ADHD, that's my dyslexia coming in. I'm reading the title here, and it's backwards here, so everybody pardon me. It's Solving the ADHD Riddle, Alpha Delta Hotel Delta Riddle, by Dr. Connie McReynolds, PhD. Go get the book. That should be your number one action right now, other than maybe listening to this interview over again. And this is going to be everywhere. It'll be on my podcast, the Wake Up, and on the Global Village Radio Show, as well as on Instagram and many other places on the podcast, as well as on the YouTube channel. Listen to it again or pass it on. How do you feel about people taking the information and maybe they think somebody should talk to you or see you? How should they share that information? I guess you have to be kind of careful. You don't want to hit somebody over the head with this and be a Bible thumper and say, go see this person. How can they, any suggestions on how they might make that suggestion?
Well, I think a soft approach, you know, with that. It's like, you know, and maybe you're thinking about someone else and you're talking to them about someone else. You know, I was thinking about this for so-and-so. What do you think about this? Have you seen this? And then maybe you kind of, you know, get them to buy in a little bit, just to let them know information's out there. Have you ever heard about neurofeedback? I watched this program the other day and was learning about it. I don't know. What do you think about it? You know, something like that, which you're not prescribing or demanding or, you know, insisting that someone do something because you've seen it, but maybe just, you know, hey, have you ever heard about this? I don't know. Tell me about what you think. And then maybe the conversation starts.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. It's kind of let the other person discover it themselves, mm-hmm. and they'll be motivated to go further. Listening to what you've said today and also in the previous interview, my God, you've covered a lot of territory with understanding the brain. I've been curious about human consciousness all my life, mm-hmm. and including the intellectual and the intuitive and then the spiritual aspects. They're all one and the same, just different levels of consciousness, if I can generically call it that. But I mean, you've been in dark places with people. You've been with children. You've talked to people in the military, which I absolutely, because I have military clients and friends. I love the Marines. My dad and uncles were in the Air Force and served in Italy and things like that. My father was in the Royal Canadian Air Force. The point being is that, first of all, to compliment you, you have had the wherewithal to discover this and push this forward. Other people are picking up on it and using it because this is gold to helping anybody get their life back. Is there much more you could explore or places to go?
Well, I think so, because one thing I haven't talked too much about is chronic pain. And
let's talk about that. We got 10 minutes left. Let's talk about that.
Chronic pain is kind of an interesting thing, and that's a challenge for a lot of folks. So at some point, somehow I got referred into, or people got referred to me from fibromyalgia support group. And so I started working with folks who had fibromyalgia. And then there's some great books, more great books here as a reference point for your listeners, is some of the work that Norman Doidge, Doidge, has done around chronic pain. And the stories that he tells, the interviews he's done, and the work that transpired around how chronic pain literally takes over the brain. And that was the real estate, a reference that I made earlier.
Wow.
Yeah, it takes over the real estate. So chronic pain, if you're in a chronic pain situation for an extended period of time, which is what chronic pain is, then it literally, he described it as it takes over the real estate of the brain. And so people will find themselves not being able to think their way through a problem. Maybe they're feeling overwhelmed by things. Maybe they feel brain fog. Maybe they're feeling all kinds of words to describe it. But what he is saying is that you lose the other functional capabilities in your brain because the pain is taking over other parts of the brain. It's just encroaching. And so his work has been in helping people figure out, again, how do you reclaim those parts of the brain and how do you get the chronic pain under control? And again, in one of his books, he's referenced neurofeedback as being an approach to tackling that. And so I've used neurofeedback for people with chronic pain. Variations exist with each person. But one woman I dealt with, she was in her early 70s, and she came to my clinic a number of years back. She was there because I think this maybe the facilitator of that group had heard about some of my work and had referred her over to me. When she came in, she had a walker that she was using. She had an attendant who was with her. Her doctors said they could no longer put her on any more pain medication because she was on the highest doses that they could give her. And so she was just debilitated with all this chronic pain. And, you know, I said, well, let's give it a go. We can try. This is all non-invasive, so we're not going to hurt you with this. So, you know, we're just going to see if we can help you dial down the tension, the anxiety around this to see if that's going to make some difference. And lo and behold, 20 or 40 sessions later, I think we did 20 hours of training with her. She came in one day toward the end of her training, and she no longer had the walker. She had a cane that she wore as an arm bracelet. Better description I don't have. She had her attendant with her, and as we were kind of going through the closeout of it, she said, well, I really don't need my attendant, but I just like her, so I'm going to keep her for the company. And she said she was off her pain medication. And she said her pain levels were a 0 and a 1 now. And
life
had been changed. So you know, I can't guarantee that anyone else would have those results because you can't do that in my work. But we can say this is what we did and this is how we did help this person. And we do know that neurofeedback has helped people with migraines. So there's some aspects of that. And all of these things are research-based. So you know, we go with what the research is out there. When someone walks in, it's like, well, let's do some research on this. Let's figure out kind of what else is out in the literature. And we do that. And then we find ways that we maybe can help someone. And if we can help, that's what we're here for. And, you know, I do have a release, so I can't guarantee the results. So I'll say we're going to do our best, but I can't guarantee the results here, but we're going to do our best.
There's one thing you can guarantee. If you don't come and make the attempt, then I guarantee nothing is going to change. But if you do come and make the attempt, then the probability is no matter small or big or large, something is going to change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're a marvelous a lady and researcher. You're a genuine Florence Nightingale type person. You're helping everybody. And you've been in such an array of background and experiences. I'm impressed, not to flatter, but to say I'm impressed that you've had this tenacity and the wherewithal to keep digging and exploring, and not when you got to one level say, okay, I'm now in the military, I've got a cushy job, I'm quitting, you know, I'm not going to go any further. You kept on keeping on, I guess is the word. And to get to children and women who are in trauma and difficulties, to pain management and giving people who have been in the service their life back. The reason I knew when you were talking about that man that came in your office and the helicopter went over the building and hit the deck, my friend, I'm not going to say his name, I'll say his first name. He was in Vietnam. He was a physician. He got citations and award for operating in the field with under a flashlight and bullets going over his head. And one day I was visiting he and his wife in their house, and his wife was we got talking about Vietnam a little bit and his service. And then she started to say, yes. And one day there was a police helicopter went over the house and he hit the deck or he hit the floor and she was laughing. Right. She said, well, look, I mean, it's his wife. You know. She said, I couldn't believe it, just like you were saying. So that's why I got a little ahead of you on that one, because I could see that they're all military people that were in Vietnam, had those helicopters, Hueys going over, and then bullets came down. That was a natural reaction. And again, there was no thinking. It was an automatic response, right? So that goes back into your key of where's that trigger point? And how can we stop it from being triggered? How can we lower the floor down? How can we get to that calm area again and learn not to be triggered while still being cognizant of dangers around us all the time? I just think it's marvelous. For my generation, you know, Vietnam was a big deal, and there is still a lot of pain about that. Maybe there's people, I think one of the big things that the veterans, when they came home, they were spit on and yelled at. I'm sure you've had to deal with some trauma along those lines as well.
We have. You know, that coming back home to that wasn't really a coming home for them. It was quite different for them. But regardless of that, anyone coming out of military conflict and wars, they come back with residuals most of the time. And so it's really some of it they work through because it may not be so locked in for some people, but the folks that, you know, find their way to where I am usually have the residuals. And if there's something that we can do to really kind of ease that up, then we're going to give it our best shot to try and get that eased up. And that's really the goal of all of this is helping people. I mean, the underlying mission, the whole purpose of all of this is really helping people live their best life. And that's the mission of everything that I'm about, whether you're 3 or 93. And so, you know, a little background, that's fine. We can shorten up the background talk and then kind of get to where you want to go. But I think there are ways we can help some folks.
ConnieMcReynolds.com. And the phone number is on the website, I assume.
Yes. And the contact form is on there. So if they fill that out, then I get a little bit of their history. I get their name and then a phone number and maybe some times that are good for me to give you a call. I'm on West Coast. Pacific time in the United States. So I'm happy to talk with folks. I heard from someone from Australia yesterday. So
I was going to say that because we have an international show, you might just have people from Spain or Norway or Australia where the show is popular. It's been a delight talking with you, Doctor. As Dr. Connie McReynolds, PhD, solving the ADHD riddle, the real cause and lasting solutions to your child's struggle to learn. And if you have a veteran, you have somebody in your life that has trauma or somebody comes to your attention, share this information and Dr. Connie and her team can change their life in just 20 sessions. That's amazing. It's always a pleasure. Until next time, I wish you much success in your career. And, you know, well, take care and God bless. Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Douglas James Cottrell Show, also available on the podcast Wake Up, on the Global Village International Radio Show, and right here on our channel. Until next time, remember, the journey doesn't stop. Right here is just beginning. So continue on your search to expand your consciousness. And may you enjoy the holidays. May you have a wonderful life ahead. And if you need Dr. Connie's help, I urge you to buy her book right away. It's available on Amazon and every place in far and wide. And go to the website, ConnieMcReynolds.com. It's a pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show again. I wish you well. I am thoroughly impressed with your work and what a wonderful person you are. You care so much for everybody. God bless you.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Thanks for listening to the Global Village Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindPro Publications and Productions. a division of Douglas James Cottrell & Associates, Incorporated. Copyright 2023, Douglas James Cottrell. No part of this broadcast audio may be reproduced in whole or in part without expressed written permission. Thanks for listening to the Global Village Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindPro Publications and Productions, a division of Douglas James Cottrell & Associates in...